Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to enhance the human element and increase the results they achieve. This podcast is about bringing you conversations with expert guests who have achieved their greatest results built on a strong foundation of purpose, values, and elevating people. If you're a business leader, entrepreneur, or even just getting started in business, join us as we build the skills you need to achieve your goals. Hello, and welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and I am excited to introduce to you Travis Wright. Travis is the director of growth at Three Gimbals, a services firm supporting the intelligence community. His journey began in aviation as a helicopter pilot and then as an airline pilot before becoming a military staff officer and eventually a management consultant. He's worked with senior leaders across industries, helping them to tackle tough problems. As a lifelong learner, he's earned degrees from George Washington University, as well as an executive certificate from Georgetown and the senior executive program at Harvard's Kennedy School. If you were to ask him about his most notable achievements, he might tell you that one of his proudest accomplishments was working as a liaison to the White House Drug Policy Office. And when Travis is not writing books, speaking, or consulting, he likes taking on home projects and tinkering with 3D printing and a variety of new technologies. Very interesting background. And Travis, welcome to our show.
Deb, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here, and I'm really excited about our conversation today.
Yeah, so thank you. So for my listeners, Travis and I recently became acquainted, and I knew from the beginning of the conversation, we would just have a great back and forth and conversation. But what really attracted me to his background is he talks about, in his story, not having goals, but having direction. And his life has built on taking risks, having experiences, even making mistakes. And that's how he's built the career that he has and what he's doing today. So very interesting, having direction and not necessarily having goals. So I'm excited. So are you ready to jump in here?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. So just to share with our listeners, tell us a little bit about your business journey and how has that contributed to the work that you're doing now?
Yeah. So when I look back at my background, and I never could have, you know, created this path that I've been on, and it's really being open to the opportunities in a way. Sometimes it's not that I'm not satisfied. You know, I'm certainly grateful for the opportunities I've had and that sort of thing. But, and I've been very blessed. I've had some great mentors who've kind of taken a chance on me and then give me these opportunities. But so I've been able to rise to the top in a lot of these areas. When I was a helicopter pilot, I was in a very elite unit in the Army. Once I got there, I was like, all right, what next? So I said, well, let me stay in aviation and I'll try the airlines. And then I did that and was like, all right, this is okay. But I still had this itch for something else. Came to DC to be a staff officer, did great there. And as you mentioned, you know, my last assignment was at the White House. And there's a lot of, you know, it's great work there, but then there's also a lot of perks and that sort of thing. And my wife, we had a conversation. I'd been there about a year and a half. And I said, no, I'm eligible to retire from the military. I think it's time to kind of move on. She's like, what are you thinking? You know, we have all these great opportunities. You know, my son had his sixth birthday party at the bowling alley at the White House and all these sorts of things. And she's like, you're crazy. What are you doing? But I said, I just feel like I can do more. And so that kind of made the shift into management consulting. And it kind of took that leap to try something a little bit different. And I've enjoyed every minute of it. It's led to where I am today. You know, being able to share some of these stories in the book and some of the people that I've been able to meet throughout those experiences has really been fantastic.
You know, you bring up a really interesting point there because I too, and I think there's a lot of entrepreneurs or people that completely switch careers that look at their significant others or their close support network, and they look at you like you have two heads. What? You're going to do what? And it's interesting, you know, these are people that you really care about and they care about you, but sometimes they just don't understand us. I mean, how were you able to bring them along and trust what you were doing?
Yeah. So, and I did it more than once. I've done it several times. So the other thing that we have in common is that you live in Cincinnati, and that's where I met my wife, is actually there when we were in Cincinnati. And she, you know, lived most of her life there. And at the time, I was part-time in the National Guard, and I was an airline pilot, so I wasn't home very much. We had our daughter was very young, and it's like, all right, you know, I don't like this. I want to be home. I want to see my kids grow up. And so this opportunity came open in D.C., and that was sort of the trade-off. I said, you know, I'm gone a lot. I don't like it. And you want me home. We can make that happen, but it requires us moving to DC and moving away from our family. We both have family in Cincinnati and in Ohio. And she's like, all right, let's go. You know, her willingness to take that step, well, that led us to, you know, all these great things that have happened. And again, I never could have orchestrated to, you know, we got to meet the president of the United States, which was fantastic. So if you don't take that leap, you don't know what's going to happen. It's being open to those opportunities. And what I like to say is, you know, I have a plan, but I don't have a script. So I kind of know a general direction that I want to go in, but I don't have like, all right, I'm going to have this job, then I'm going to have this job, then I'm going to have this job and that job. Another thing that sort of encapsulates that really well is a story that I read. There's an article, actually it's a book, and I read an article about it, and I'll have to get back to you on the author's name, but it actually has to do with raising children, and it talks about, are you a gardener or a carpenter, and how you raise your children. And there's two approaches, right? The carpenter approach is a little bit more rigid. It takes, you know, you have to get these fine details and measurements and that sort of thing. So it's, I'm your dad. I was a doctor. You're going to be a doctor. Here's the schools you're going to go to. I'm going to lay it all out for you, make that happen, right? And that's an approach. The other approach is the gardener approach where, you know, I don't know what's best for you. And this is how I treat my children too, because they're very different. I don't know what is best for you, but you know what I'm going to do? I don't know where you're headed. But what I can do is I can put you in fertile soil. I can water you. I can weed and those sorts of things. And kind of, you know, as you grow, I can put in a stake to make sure, you know, you don't go too far off course, but I can give you some gentle guidance and that sort of thing. And not only do I do that with my children, but that's also my leadership style. Like I like to give people enough space to find out who they are, to make mistakes within some boundaries, right? Where I don't want them to get in too much trouble or take too many risks. But, you know, if it's, if there's just a couple of areas where they could make a mistake, they're going to learn more from that than if I tell them, nope, this is the way you need to do it without giving them the context and that sort of thing.
I love what you talk about here. And it could be maybe a generational thing because I too followed the box. I followed the path from engineering into corporate America. And I will say, however, I never had a specific script, but I also knew following this path, engineering, manufacturing, building my skills in quality, food safety, continuous improvement. I know I was going in the right direction, but the end game wasn't there. So I love that point that you've brought up. But I will say, as I've matured as a parent as well, and I also think this way with people that I'm mentoring, that I don't want to box people in because as soon as you box, you only operate within the context of that box. And when I left corporate and started my own business, who would have thought I would be on a podcast interview with you right now? The yes. Possibilities are endless, and I'm getting insights, inspiration, and we grow with the people we surround ourselves with. So I love the carpenter and the gardener, the plan without a script.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's really served me well. And it doesn't always work out great, right? So there's also times when you're like, oh man, this kind of, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done that. When you look back, whenever you hear someone famous or, you know, interviewed or something like that, especially when they've had a long career, whether they're in business or in acting or whatever, you know, they'll always ask, you know, well, do you have any regrets? And when I think about that question, I think, well, no, you know, do I wish there were some not painful moments or something like, well, sure. But all of those decisions, whether they were right or wrong, have made me who I am today. And, you know, this is the best version of myself that, you know, that I know of. I don't know what would have happened, you know, how much different I would have been with those other decisions. But it's like taking a chance, like, that didn't work out. Let me try something different and see if it will work out.
So let's go back a little bit to, you wrote a book, Make New Mistakes, in this book. And so often, you know, you'll see titles about, you know, three steps for success or, you know, what to avoid. But you talk about making new mistakes as if you embrace it and let's not be scared of it. I would love to know, why did you write the book and what is the message you try to get to your readers?
Yeah, I had never really intended to write a book. It's not like a lifelong passion or anything I've had. It's just because I have this really atypical career path in multiple different industries that I come up with all these different stories. And I saw, especially in my consulting career, I saw a lot of patterns that would even go back to my military days. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of the same problem. You find out that people are, you know, they're kind of the same, right? They're the CFO, they've kind of, most of them have a little bit of the same personality. Oh, and really just the acronyms and the names change, but a lot of the problems end up being the same. As soon as I was able to realize that, really made consulting not easy, but easier for me, or able me to, you know, bin problems in different areas. So it was really the culmination of some of those stories as I was telling them, as I was consulting, I was like, oh, I want to use this story here. And I would just start capturing all of these and I would start to write them down. And then I started to do a little bit of blogging on the company site and on LinkedIn and that sort of thing. And I'm like, I think there's something here. Let me jump in and go a little bit deeper with this. And so I did. And I was able to talk to a bunch of senior leaders across several different industries that have been through in different sizes as well. So there's everyone from this one guy, Connor Crooks, who has a premium tool belt company and that he's taken over in Virginia, to the head or the chief information officer at Health and Human Services, which is probably the second largest federal agency behind the Department of Defense, and everything in between, private, federal sector, and all that sort of thing. And there's a lot of the same problems, same challenges across all those areas. Really, what the difference is that the number of zeros behind the headcount and the budget, really, but the problems are really very similar. So I was able to capture a lot of those and to share where some were successful, some weren't, how they overcame some of those things. And I obviously, I share some of my own mistakes as well in there.
So mistakes versus choices that we make and we learn from them. You've jumped around a bit. I mean, I don't think you should regret that. I mean, I'm just reacting to all your stories. We talk about these mistakes and I can make an investment in a web designer and I don't get the right output that I was expecting. What could I have learned from that? I'm an optimist and I don't like to think about mistakes or just things that we've taken a risk, because the more risks we take, the more we can iterate and learn what we do. So, I mean, do you really think that these are mistakes, or maybe you're a big risk taker?
Yeah, so that's a good point and a good distinction, I think. So the genesis for the book and the reason I came up with the name was I was right out of flight school in the Army. I was at my first unit. And one of the things that we had to do every week, we had pilots meetings. And there would be, they had an agenda for it and there would be a class. And typically they'd have the junior pilots come in and teach a class. So it gave us a chance to learn a little bit more about whatever the topic was. And because we have to have annual check rides and that sorts of thing. So I came into my first unit, I'm only 19 years old, and I go in and they give me this topic, aerodynamics and then auto rotation. I'm like, oh my goodness, how am I going to do this? Now I'd been taught the class and I kind of understood the concepts a little bit, but I'm like, how am I going to teach this? Not only how am I going to teach it, but how am I going to teach it to this group of pilots who've been in the Army longer than I've been alive, right? They're going to know more than I will ever know, and how am I going to teach them anything? And so I'm struggling through, I have the materials and everything, and other people had given the class and that sort of thing, so I'm taking some of that. My instructor was a guy named Don Murray, and he said, he could see I was struggling, and he said, what's going on? I said, well, I'm just afraid I'm going to screw this up. And he said, yeah, you probably will. So I'm like, well, thanks, Don. thanks for the motivation, right? And he's like, no, you're not hearing what I'm saying. He said, listen, you probably will screw it up, but look, you've got the books, you've got the research material, you've got people who've done this class before. And Deb, I'll date myself here a little bit, but this was back before PowerPoint. We had transparencies and overhead projector. So I had some of those. And he said, look, you've got that. You've got the material there. So you can build on what these other people have done, what they've done before you, and those that have gone before you, to go out and you'll make your own mistakes. You won't make the same mistakes that they've made. You won't misspell something on the slide because it's already done for you. You'll have the terms in front of you and that sort of thing. So what that enabled me to kind of think about was, look, I'm human. I'm going to screw up. I'm going to make mistakes. That's okay. But let's not make the same mistakes that other people have made. Let's learn from those. And that's where I kind of come from. So in the context of the book, I kind of lump those together a little bit, right? It's just sort of things are not going to go right. They're not going to go the way you planned, whether you're the best intentions or not. It's not going to work out. And I'll share one other story real quick. In the race with Secretariat, who had the fastest Kentucky Derby ever, the horse that came in second actually broke the 2-minute mile. Yeah, but because it was second to Secretariat, who was even faster, right? So you never know how things are going to work out. So on any other day, that horse that came in second would have been a record breaker. I think there's some of that too, where you can have the best intentions. You can be thinking you're doing everything that's right and really believing that and probably doing the right things. It doesn't mean it's always going to work out.
I'm taking lots of notes here. I'm thinking at the same time as you're talking. When we take risks and when we make mistakes, you're putting yourself in the context of who you're delivering your message to. And that's certainly very important. and you're of the mindset, am I going to meet their desired expectations? But if you think about it, if it's something you're doing for the first time and you actually do pretty well in the context of who you are as a person, putting yourself out there, you've grown by leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. And I'll share a little story, and I'm a little bit of a geek in the continuous improvement world. I had to teach a class on statistics, analysis of variation, ANOVA. And I absolutely hate statistics, but it was an important part of the class. And the lead instructor said, you're going to teach this. And so to be able to say, how can I teach this when I even struggle with articulating it, forces you to go to a place to be able to say, well, how am I going to have deep understanding of this concept so that I can do it for others? And I'll tell you, the way I explained it, because to help me understand it, actually became a best practice to be able to teach this difficult statistical concept to others. So I felt challenged. I know I made mistakes, but I moved myself forward and possibly the lives of others. So take a risk, everybody. Make mistakes. Only good can come from it.
Absolutely. And God, God bless you for teaching statistics. Yeah, that was, I didn't like it either time I took it. So,
you know, I'll hire the people that really know it well to work with me in that area. So looking for some statistics geeks. So let's change it a little bit. You have had mentors in your life, and you said that they've actually been very supportive and helped you. I'd love to know how some of these mentors have supported you and helped you along the way.
Yeah, I've been asked before, you know, like, who's your biggest mentor? And I don't think there's one. It would be difficult to pick just one, because there were people that were present at different times, you know, almost at the right time. What's that old saying, you know, when the student is ready, the master will appear, type of thing. And that's sort of how I've been with my mentors. And some of the people that I think back to that had the most impact on me, so this goes back to my military days. Like, I don't remember my first flight instructor's name or my first instructor pilot when I was in the military, but I remember my drill sergeant's names, you know, Drill Sergeant Pacheco, Turner, and Lemon. Just the impact it had on me getting into my military career and the discipline. And so those were definitely some good ones. The other one I mentioned was Don Murray, who was a fantastic instructor pilot and really kind of took me under his wing, helping me to be the pilot that I was. Another one that I'll share is still back into my aviation days. It was this commander. His name was Joe Reed. He was new to our unit. This was a couple of years into my career. I wanted to go into this special operations unit, and there were some things I needed to do, some other planning I needed to practice on and that sort of thing to actually basically try out for this unit. And so Joe was our brand new commander. We were going out to our first field exercise with him as the commander. He said, you know what? Well, you plan it. I'll be there, but you plan it. We'll see how it goes. I'm like, wow, that was great. He did not have to do that, because this is his first time in front of his boss as well to really kind of show how he's going to lead. So it went fine, right? He helped me throughout the whole process, and we were able to work it out and, you know, give me a lot of confidence in what I was doing. I was eventually able to make it into that unit. But I took that back into my style when I became an instructor and as a leader now, taking it back, like, I'll give as much latitude as I can. So thinking back to my instructor days, I would go and fly with someone, and if they had a plan, I'm like, oh, this is never going to work. As long as it wasn't unsafe or anything like that, I was like, let's try it. You know, let's see what happens with this. And they would learn from that. Where that came to fruition for me was, it was toward the end of my military career. I went back to our schoolhouses down at Fort Rucker in Alabama. I was down there for a course, and I went to see some friends that were teaching down there. And I ran into this guy. I didn't know he was going to be there. He said he was teaching in front of these brand new pilots. And he came over. We stopped the class. He came over to me. And it was a guy I knew when he was brand new as a pilot. Now here he is as an instructor. And he took time out of the class. He said, hey, I just want to thank you, because you gave us so much latitude. I learned so much because of the way that you taught us. It's really changed how I've taught and how I'm teaching now. And so he's able to pass it on. So just to see from, you know, 100 years ago when Joe Reed, you know, took that chance on me, and how I was able to pay that forward and then over to this pilot that I was able to mentor. And then now he's passing that on, you know, even further. So it's continuing and growing. Was really fantastic.
I like what you're saying about that, because, you know, it's almost not like they gave you a piece of wisdom, but by simply trusting you and encouraging you and helping you to learn from those lessons, I feel like you've modeled that same style, because it's so easy as a mentor to help people to not make the same mistakes. Mm-hmm. But I found that the more you ask questions, the more you listen, and as long as they don't do something totally wrong to blow up the opportunity they're pursuing, seeing them learn, seeing them come back and say, hey, that really worked, or, you know, I learned something from this. But it's like you have to guide them, and just trusting them and you spending time with them will help them to achieve better results. So I love that about how you've taken the work from your mentors and paid it forward.
Yeah.
So we haven't talked too much about the consulting work that you do now. I mean, obviously, we went right from your military career, your life lessons, to your book. But tell us a little bit more about, you know, now that you're out of the military, your consulting work, and maybe about a kind of a challenging, tough situation that maybe you dropped into where, you know, you were able to use your skills and your life lessons to be able to move the client or the business forward.
Yeah, so I left the military, like you said, and then went into consulting. When I transitioned from the military the second time, I was like, I want to be a consultant. Well, all right, you know, that can mean anything, right? It could be Mary Kay, it could be McKinsey, and everything in between. There's so much of what a consultant could be and what it means. So I didn't have, like, where did I want to specialize? I kind of knew I didn't want to do Department of Defense stuff anymore. I want to kind of get out of that, feel like I had done it. I want to try something new. I would have this group of mentors and people I would talk to, and whoever I talked to last, like, oh, that's what I'm going to do. God, maybe you should go into finance. All right, I'm going to go into finance. So maybe you should do this. And it's kind of all over the place. I was fortunate. I just kind of happened into a role at a company that does a lot of like human-centered design and design thinking in the human side of change management. It was totally different and a total shift. So I come from this big Department of Defense, you know, male-dominated, bureaucratic machine to this small, at the time, was 40-person company, 60 to 70% female, and it's all the women are in the leadership, CEO, CFO, you know, all that. It's just total shift. And then we're not doing, like, hard quantitative stuff. It's all qualitative stuff and a lot of, now I'm used to briefing. I've briefed in front of generals and that sort of thing. But this is facilitation, which is totally different. It's more like the difference between giving a speech and doing improv comedy, where you have to react to the audience, right? And so it really challenged me in that area. I learned so much. I was there for almost 5 years. I was with a client, which was within the Health and Human Services. They had this opportunity to do this big shift at the leadership change, and they had some new authorities that they were given, and they were trying to figure out where they were going to go. So I threw back on my aviation hat, and I guided them through this exercise. And I said, look, we're flying along in a plane. You know, that's all of us that are here. We're heading in a direction. Here's our agency goals. But as we're flying along, you know, there's things that are happening outside of this plane, outside of this office. So we've got some headwinds that are pushing against us. Those can be, you know, different policy changes or other offices that are competing with us or, you know, customers, you know, not doing what we need or something like that, right? So we identify, we went through this whole exercise, what are those things? So they came up with a list. Now, what are the things that are propelling us forward? We call those tailwinds in aviation. What's pushing us forward, helping us conserve our energy? So who are our champions? Who are the people that are supporting us? What are the good things that are going on that we can talk about? And I said, now there's also some systemic things that will happen. There'll be, you know, overarching, you know, regulations, things we can't control. And that's sort of the weather that happens. You know, like there's thunderstorms or it's overcast and those sorts of things. How can we, you know, what are those sorts of things? So again, we talked about that. And I said, now, as we're flying along, there's going to be things that are going to pop up. There'll be a tower that'll come up that we'll have to dodge that maybe we didn't see, or power lines or something like that that will come up. So what are those things that are going to pop up that we're going to have to react to? We're going to have to shift our course. But then how do we get back on course to get back toward this goal that we're headed towards? So I was able to lead them through this whole exercise and kind of combine, right, the best of both of worlds for me, my consulting and my aviation, and kind of, you know, in this serendipitous moment, just sort of, you know, guide them through all of that. So I did it with the senior leadership, and then I did it with the middle management as well. And then we went back and we compared, like, are you seeing the same things that I'm seeing? You know, what you think is important, I don't think is important. And I think the real lesson there is for leaders is communication. I have a friend who says that we under-communicate 100% of the time. And I love that saying, because even in the best of times, we're holding so much. What do we parse out to the people that are around us? What's important for them? And that's a decision, you know, leaders have to make on how much they want to share. You know, as a leader, you have the probably a little bit more sense of calm because you know a little bit more of what's going on. We're a little bit nervous, especially with small businesses or something like that. I'm going to have to shut down, but it's going to be in a month. Or if we don't get a loan, you know, in 2 weeks, we're going to be done. Or I'm going to make these shifts and I'm going to keep this person and let that person, you know, making all these sorts of decisions. Mm-hmm. But you know that, and there's some confidence in knowing that. Whereas keeping in mind for the people that are working for you, your middle managers and your staff, they don't hold that whole big picture that you hold. And how can you convey to them the confidence? Like, look, these are the steps I'm making. These are the decisions I'm making. This is why, especially in times like now. And then just keep communicating. And then things are going to change. You're going to be wrong on some of this stuff. So I think letting your team know what you know, and just as importantly, what you don't know.
Yeah, you know, I love how these stories weave together. So, you know, we're not recording the video here, but if I could show you the piece of paper that I have, it's got arrows and lines and highlights all over the place. And I think in terms of connections, and when we talk about your journey, you certainly have tremendous skills from your military days. It teaches you executive briefings, get to the point, here's the data, here's the risk, here's the impact. But I find also for myself and for those people that are listening, your skills or what you need have to evolve. And so moving into different kinds of consultancy, sometimes you have to learn the human and the facilitation skills to enrich and find different ways to communicate, which was one of your main points. And then the last thing is then bringing in your own brand, bringing in your personal experience and bringing in that aviation and the weather and all of those things. One connects people to you more in who you are as a human being and your legacy or your history. That actually makes what you're doing with these people so much more personable and enables you to connect and communicate. So I love how your stories, as you say, keep building on each other. You don't have a script, but this plan of continuing to evolve your skills to impact people and communicate in the best way is just a fantastic story. So I love listening to all of that. So thank you.
Thank you, Deb. Yep.
Now, I want to just pick out one thing. I researched you a little bit and I went to your website. Yes, I went to your website. And one of the quotes that you have on here, I want to know a little bit more about. It says, "If one advances confidently in the direction of his dreams and endeavors to the life which he has imagined, he will meet with success unexpected in the common hours." Henry David Thoreau. Why did you select that?
You know, because I think that captures much more articulately than I could express this whole concept that I've lived my life on of, you know, having a plan but not a script. And just being, say, when I make a decision to do something like, all right, I'm gonna be all in. And we do that with our kids. You know, as a dad, I do that as well. Just as a quick example, my daughter, she was like 6 or 7, and she was all about bugs and insects and that sort of thing. And she said, you know, I really like bees. I'd like to learn how to keep bees. I'm like, well, that's nothing I've ever wanted to do, right? I was like, oh, all right, well, we'll see. Well, there came an opportunity. There was a class that came up and we ended up taking it. And I was this old farmer. He kept bees for, you know, like 50 years or something like that. And we went to classes and my daughter loved it. And then the more I learned about the bees, I was like, oh, this is actually really interesting. But we went all in. We went out, you know, I bought hives, you know, the equipment, all the equipment that goes with it, the hive boxes and that sort of thing, and then actually buying the bees too. But we went all in on that and said, all right, let's try it and see what happens. And we did it for a couple of years and it was a great experience. So we do that with my kids and whatever they want to do, but that's really what I've done in my life too. It's like when I went into aviation, I was very fortunate. I knew when I was 5 years old that that's what I wanted to be a pilot. So I was all in. I, you know, all my studies were towards that. I started flying when I was 15 and sort of figured all that out. When I decided, all right, I want to be a consultant, I went all in. You know, that's when I went to grad school and I went to these other courses and kind of figure out these ways to mm-hmm. improve myself so that I could just, you know, have it all. And I think that's one of the reasons that I kind of move on to something else. It's not that I'm the best at it or the most experienced at it, but I feel like I've gotten what I need from it. So now how can I take this to something else and try something else? The one other example I'll share, another part of the concept of that is, so Warren Buffett's business partner is a guy named Charlie Munger, and he's less famous, but still just as wealthy. He has this concept called an expert generalist. That's what I aspire to be, right? He goes very deep on these different topics and he has very diverse knowledge base. So he's able to make these connections and then he applies it in a investing sense and is able to, you know, make these connections that other people, you know, are not able to do.
I'm smiling here. I mean, we can see each other. We're not recording this video, but our listeners, Travis and I, can see each other. And I'm making all these faces. I'm like thumbs up because he's hitting a home run when it comes to me. And mind you, I also created this podcast because I'm looking for insights and inspiration from different people I connect with. And I really, really, really love the concept of being all in because, you know, I tell my children sometimes they will have these things like, oh, I want to do this. And by the way, my son wanted to be a pilot. And I think he still might be one someday. And we went all in with the lessons. And yes, they may have gone in a different direction, but thank goodness they had an opportunity to at least try it and know if they wanted to go in that direction. And the last thing I really love was being an expert generalist, because I tell a story on a podcast where, depending on the boss that I had, they said, get out of the weeds, be more of a strategic thinker. And then when I would think broadly, the next boss would say, you're not getting it, you're not rolling up your sleeves enough and getting involved. So who are you going to really satisfy? But being an expert generalist, having the breadth of understanding of all the different skills, cultures, people, and being able to connect the dots is another skill sought after. And sometimes companies that we work with look for those people to know how to piece it together and who to pull in to serve them and solve whatever the issue is with their business. So love it. So as we kind of start bringing this home here, I want to just give you an opportunity. Is there anything else that maybe you want to share with our listeners, a lesson learned, a piece of advice, or anything else about the work you do or the book or your speaking?
Yeah, no, thanks for the opportunity, Deb. I think I like to have the balance in the book and in, as we talk as well to have, you know, there's some theory and everything, but also being, I'm a pragmatist as well. Like, all right, so what am I going to do tomorrow about some of these things? When I mentor young people is I talk to them about putting up together an informal board of advisors. And I think this is good for anyone at any stage of their career, thinking about what are your flat spots, and they're going to change as you mature, right? And you go up as a leader. But coming up with this informal board of advisors, it could be in your company or not. Sometimes it's better if they're not, but these people that you're accountable to and can kind of fill in the gaps that you have. So a couple of those positions could be a place to start is, you know, if you're not a technical person, having someone who is and can kind of, you know, be a resource for you. And they don't have to be in your field either. Even if they're just like an engineering, you know, person in a different field and you can ask them like, hey, what do you think about this concept? They could probably give you some ideas on it. Having a skeptic. So I have a friend who I'll say, hey, I've got this great idea. I want to do this. And like before I even get the idea out, she's already coming up with like her 5-point plan why this will never work, right? It's great to have, and I love her because those are the same arguments that my detractors are going to come up with. So I'd much rather have it now with her and come up with, you know, responses to those and maybe say, oh, you're right, that was just a crazy idea. Maybe I shouldn't do that. Or it's like, no, this is important. We need to do this, and this is how I'll address those. The last one I'll share is it's also important to have your cheerleader. The mom type, right? Someone who, when you're having a bad day, is just like, oh, you're doing the right thing. And it can be an encourager and not in a Pollyannish way, or like it needs to be authentic because otherwise it's not going to mean anything to you. But they're also someone who's good to brainstorm stuff with. Say, hey, I'd like to try this thing. It's like, oh yeah. You know, they're the yes and people, right? Oh yeah, you can do that. And then you can do this other thing. And so they're great to brainstorm sort of ideas to come up with. And that's not all encompassing. That's just to kind of give people a start on some things to think about. They don't need to know that they're part of your informal board or anything like that. And there's no formal meetings. It's just like, hey, when I have this type of question, I'm going to go to Bob or I'm going to go to Sue or whatever it is that you can reach out to them. Then the last thing, sort of your the head of your board should be a champion, someone who can guide you in your career, can open doors in your career, ideally in your industry, you know, wherever you're headed, that they can kind of make those things happen for you. So I think those are some things that are important, some practical advice. Hopefully someone can listen to this. They can start thinking, maybe here's a couple of people I could reach out to and maybe schedule those coffees with and that sort of thing.
All right. So this has been a fantastic conversation, full of so much insight. So I know when I re-listen to this podcast, when it goes live, I'm going to be filling up a piece of paper with things I'm going to try and think about. So if people want to reach out to you, and I know they absolutely will, how is the best way for them to connect with you?
Yep. Look me up on LinkedIn, Travis Wright on LinkedIn. And then my website is makingnewmistakes.info, and be happy to continue the conversation there as well.
All right. This has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much, Travis.
Thanks, Deb.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. For more information about our consulting or coaching services, please visit my website at dropinceo.com or visit our Drop-In CEO Facebook group to continue the conversation. Now go out, lead, inspire, and achieve your goals.